From the studios of WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Spring is here, even if we've had a few nights lately that haven't exactly felt springy. We're seeing greenish-yellow pollen on cars, roadways, around local retention ponds. And today is the first official day of ozone season, when state and local governments begin daily air quality forecasts in metropolitan areas across North Carolina. It's also our first Coastline with a focus on coastal gardening. And with us today to help you through those head-scratchers that confound you every year are two exceptional local gardeners. Barbara Sullivan is a master gardener and the author of Garden Perennials for the Coastal South. Barbara Sullivan, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
Also with us today is the co-owner of The Transplanted Garden, a garden shop in Wilmington that sells plants, garden paraphernalia, and offers expert advice to locals and new transplants to the area. Tom Erickson, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here today.
Because this show is all about your gardening questions, we're opening the phone lines right away. If you have a question for our guests, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at coastlinehqr. Now, both of you moved here from more northern places. When you confront other transplants, people from farther north, what do you find is the most common mistake they make when they undertake their spring planting?
Oh, a lot of times they come into the garden center this time of the year and they're looking, right now, they're looking for pansies and snapdragons, which are some things that we plant here in the fall and get through the winter. And normally when we don't have such a cold winter, they bloom beautifully for us. So this year they took a bit of a beating, but they're still coming along with flowers. And a lot of times they just don't know the sequence of what they should be planting. Like the pansies and snapdragons, but there's also a lot of different plants that they'd like to grow here that just aren't going to make it, things like lilacs. You know, peonies are a struggle. There's a number of different things that fit into that category. Lily of the Valley is another one. So there's a lot that they have to learn to adjust to our climate here. There's a lot of things that might be sort of upside down for them as far as the timing goes.
Barbara Sullivan?
Yes, I would agree heartily. And when I have given talks, I've had people come up to me almost in tears who've been from elsewhere, and they're like, I'm so glad to hear that I haven't lost my green thumb, because I was so discouraged because they were planting things that were old standbys for them in Connecticut or Ohio or England in some cases that just don't do well. And one of the main reasons I wrote the book I did was to try to find out for myself and then tell other people what are some really wonderful plants that do wonderfully here that they might just not be familiar with because they're not in the standard gardening books that are written for people usually further north.
So what would some of those really great plants be for people who are new to this area?
Well, there's a long list. There's actually, I think there were something like 1,000 of them. But basically, if I could get a teeny weeny bit technical here.
Yes.
Okay. So we are in Zone 8, which is a USDA zone, and mostly those were created to tell people what will survive the winter. That was the reason for creating those zones.
This is the USDA hardiness zone.
Plant hardiness zone.
Yes.
Exactly. And so what I found after I did my research was that plants – and when you see a plant on a tag or in a book, it'll have two numbers. The first number is as far north as the plant can stand, and the second number is theoretically as far south, but not really because they haven't tweaked that quite that way. But plants that are zoned 6 through 9, 8 through 10, 7 through 10, 7 through 9 – right around our zone, right around 8, just do really beautifully for me. That, and it's just interesting to see. Whereas if you get a plant zoned 3 through 7 and we're zone 8, that plant is probably not going to do so well for us.
So we're zone 8. When you're talking about 3 through 7, what part of the country are we talking about?
You'd be figuring probably western North Carolina. You'd be Virginia. You'd be up into zone 3 would be, you know, mid-Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, that kind of an area. So you've really got to adjust to the cold how cold it will take, like Barbara was saying, but also how much heat will take. And they've come out with a heat zone map, but most of the plants, unfortunately, are not rated for that. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that on the West Coast that do really well in a zone 8 out there, but you've got to remember that the Pacific Northwest is a much cooler summer climate than what we have here. It's more like what England has. And they can grow palms there where it doesn't get real cold, but it doesn't get real hot, so they may not thrive as well as palms do here. But a lot of those plants really need to be heat rated so that they, you know, you don't try to grow things like California lilac, which is a whole different type of plant, but that's what they call it. It's rated to zone 8 or 9, but it just can't take the extended heat nor the humidity here. It just melts out, as they call it. It just rots away.
And I was going to just add that one of the things that they looked at in the heat zone map was how many days above 86 degrees, and we're something like 90 to 120 days of the year that
We're above the, 86 degrees.
Which is kind of scary. And another thing, my understanding is that one of the problems plants face in our climate is that during those hot days, the nights don't cool. It just doesn't cool off enough at night to give the plants time to rest, and they need their rest. Certain plants. Now, the ones that, as we were mentioning, that do really well for us, for whatever reason, are not as affected by that as some of the ones that like cooler weather.
You were talking, before we went on the air, you were talking about Salt Magazine. The new issue just came out, and there's an article about lilacs. How do you feel, Tom Erickson of the Transplanted Garden, about lilacs in this area?
Well, a customer mentioned it to me yesterday, and we distribute the magazine at the store, and we just got it in about an hour, half an hour before I left. So I opened it up to find the article, and that mentioned, I saw it there, I looked at it, looked up the author's name, you know, did a search for him. He lives in Raleigh, and Raleigh is a lot more typically cooler in the wintertime, so they get the number of chilling hours that these lilacs will need. And these are some varieties that were developed in California where they don't get a lot of cool either, but they don't get the heat that we do. And so they get fewer chilling hours, but that's what they're developed for. And so these plants can take the temperatures that they might have in Raleigh, where it's more consistently cold in the winter, but we don't get that here. I mean, we can be 70 or 80 in February. We can be even warmer, where Raleigh might be in the 60s and then go down into the 30s or even 20s at night, and we might be in the 40s or 50s. So even though they can grow in North Carolina, it's cooler parts of North Carolina.
So if someone actually planted lilacs here, what's likely to happen?
They'll probably survive for a short period of time. They may bloom the first year or two, especially if we get a cold winter after they've been planted. There was one that I had from a nursery in South Carolina several years ago that went out of business called Tiny Dancer. I have been trying to get that. I know where they're propagating it. I've tried contacting them. We're going to give it another shot. One of the nurseries that I deal with here in North Carolina, I've asked them to see if they can get some propagation material and grow it on, because lilacs in pots aren't real simple to grow. They don't like to be real wet and then real dry and back and forth. They like a consistent moisture level. So I'm trying to get that one again. But some of these other varieties, I mean, I don't know enough about them. I just saw the article. And like I said, the gentleman lives in Raleigh. So maybe they do really well for him there or in Charlotte. Certainly the western part of the state, they'd be fine.
And that's something a lot of people wouldn't necessarily think about, the fact that just over on the coast, our climate is so different from a plant perspective than Raleigh. Barbara Sullivan.
Yes. Well, I agree completely with what Tom said. And one thing I tried to do is to suggest to people who remember lilacs from their childhood or remember peonies or remember lily of the valley or some of the things that are not quite as suited here is to find it's not really a substitute, but something with some of the same qualities. And there's a wonderful tree here called Vitex or Chaste tree. It doesn't have any lilac scent, but it has beautiful blue blossoms that have that same kind of thick what would be a good word?
Oh, they've got large spikes of blue flowers.
Yes, good. Yeah. That's right. Large spikes of blue flowers, and they get tall and voluptuous, and they bloom for a long time in the summer. And so if you look for plants that do really well here, but that could be maybe a substitute, and if you absolutely must have the plant that you love from your childhood, you can try working with it. But what happens is the plants that aren't suited here are more attractive to pests. They're not as drought tolerant. They just don't have the stamina. They're weaker. And so the likelihood, that's true actually of rhododendron. And azaleas are a kind of rhododendron, but the actual rhododendron that we think of that grows in the mountains is another example of something. People sell them. You can try to nurse them along, but this is not where they're the happiest.
That's interesting, too. You're saying some of these plants that don't really belong here attract pests, and that, I imagine, would affect the entire ecosystem.
Actually, it's interesting because I have been told that pests will fly over the healthy plants and find the – it reminds me of the programs on the Nature Channel where you have the little wildebeest that's kind of at the end of the herd and the tigers get it. But the sick plant in the garden is the one. They will fly over a healthy neighbor's gardens and then find the plants that are weakest and attack those and decimate them. And you could have healthy plants all around it that are not affected.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking with Master Gardener Barbara Sullivan and co-owner of the Transplanted Garden, Tom Erickson, about coastal gardening tips and tricks, ways to avoid common gardening mistakes. If you have a question about how to handle an element of your garden, if you'd like a reality check about what might work for this year's spring planting, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. This is Coastline.